I think we'll get started. First of all, I just want to thank everyone. Hope you had a good lunch. My name is Eamon O'Reilly. I'm a program manager on the orchestrator team inside the System Center. And with me today is Srikant Ranganathan, who's on the service manager side of the System Center team. First off, I just want to go over the agenda for a second. So we got a chance to talk to a few people beforehand. So this session really covers three main things. Mostly, we talk a little about what's new in System Center 2012, and a particular emphasis on the automation side and the service manager pieces of those. But the session also talks a lot about if you're currently using SM10, how to bring that forward into SM2012. And similarly, if you're using Opalis, so Opalis was the company we acquired about 2.5 years ago in Microsoft. And we've been working since then to incorporate it into System Center. And so there's some content around what does it take to move those investments you've made into Opalis forward into System Center and into Orchestrator so you can take advantage of it. With that said, I definitely would like to just understand a little bit how many people are familiar or are using Service Manager 2010 today. Good. So I have four or five, so hopefully you'll get some value out of how to move forward and an upgrade process for Service Manager. What about Opalis? Are people using that today? Good, about a similar number, maybe 6 or 7. So we'll definitely go through the content there as well. And then at the end, we'll show kind of how the two of these together, you can actually do a lot more in 2012 than you could individually that you're probably doing in your organizations.
Can you just ask the people that can hear you? There's a lot of echo coming from outside.
Oh, I think everyone in the back can still hear me okay, can they? Good, thank you. Okay, so the two main things we're going to talk a bit around is how do we deliver self-service with System Center? And the second thing is, in order to deliver self-service, you really need to think about automating the processes behind that self-service. And so I think a lot of you have probably been coming to TechEd, or if you haven't, Microsoft in general, and most of you have been struggling with how do we actually start to get to this goal of delivering IT as a service? Or what is this private cloud we're talking about? And I think a lot of it has been challenging. I know I've worked on it for a few years, and it's been a kind of a moving target. We've had virtualization come in, which has changed a lot. We've had new management systems come in. And so it's been a struggle to really get to a point where, as you increase the number of machines you're managing, either on the client side or the server side, you can't really keep up unless you start to invest in automation and you start to invest in delivering those services to your end users as self-service. And so what System Center really is about is thinking about two different users in your organization. There's probably most of you would maybe represent what we would call that DC admin. And most of that data center admin or administrator, IT administrator, is thinking about, okay, how do I build up all of my services that I can actually then deliver out to that consumer of them in a way that they can consume on demand? So what is that IT on demand that we're getting towards? And how we've done that in System Center is we've brought all the different assets we've had around virtual machine manager, configuration manager, operations manager, service manager, orchestrator. And so all of that monitoring, all of that client configuration, all of the information we gather from the systems are now automatically brought into this CMDB. So this, all of that information is located in one place inside Service Manager. And with that, you then have the ability to actually deliver self-service on top of that because all of the information is stored in one place and then can be delivered to your end users. So how do you go about doing this? The way we look at it inside Microsoft is you really want to break it down to three different things. And the first of those is you got to figure out how to standardize. If you don't get to standardization and every request is a customized request, then from an IT perspective, you have to do something custom to meet those needs. And it really, you can never get to a point where that's automated because everything is customized. And so you got to start thinking about how do I standardize first? What does it take to say what are those specific services that my end users need? Agree with them on what those are, and then you can actually get to a standardized process that you're going to deliver. Once you've figured out what you're going to standardize and deliver to your end users, you really want to be able to give it to them in a way they can consume it without having to contact you. And that's what's going to enable them to consume them independent of those resources available to meet their needs on the IT side. And so we've done a lot of work in service managers, particularly in 2012, to push forward this idea of self-service and a self-service portal. And so this is where you'd want to send all of your end users going forward so they can consume their services as they need. And the last thing you want to do, you really can't have self-service, as all of it does is they enter a ticket and then you still have to do all the work behind the scenes to do it. There's going to be some of those that come in, but the more you standardize, the more it allows you then to automate the tasks behind those things. So somebody says, oh, I forgot my password, what do I do? If you have a self-service for that, you then automate all the back end behind that. And if it requires approval by their manager, you can stop halfway through, get approval, and then continue on with the workflow all in one single pass without them actually knowing it's gone through all these different steps. So you're going to hide the complexity of IT through automation from that self-service end user. And that's the goal you really need to start thinking about as you start looking at your data center, looking at your client, look at those services you provide going forward in your organization. So hopefully that kind of sets the stage of what we're going to talk about later. But when you start thinking about, okay, this is the future, I need to start thinking about self-service and automation and standardization, what are some of the challenges that customers are already solving today and most of you are probably tackling? So here's kind of a list we see of, you may have things in your organization where you have a bunch of scripts you use. There's some manual tasks you do through email, capturing stuff through spreadsheets. You may have challenges around how do I do provisioning or capacity management? How do I meet SLAs? All these different scenarios that you're basically doing on the IT side, but a lot of us have been struggling to actually convert these into something that's self-service and automated. And so you really want to start looking at a lot of these type of things you do in an organization and describing what actual process happens when one of these things is required. And so a lot of the investments you've done in scripts or anything else, you can convert all those and bring them into System Center 2012. You don't have to redo everything. You can bring a lot of that knowledge, a lot of the scripts, a lot of your investments in. And then once you convert those into System Center 2012, those three things we talked about on standardization, self-service, and automation are then possible for you along all of these scenarios and others that aren't even mentioned. Okay, with that, we're going to spend some time, not as much because I know there's only 5 or 6 who are using maybe 7 or 8 Service Manager 10, but we definitely wanted to show you what does it take to move that investment you've made in SM10 to SM2012, start to see some of the new capabilities there. And Srikant from Service Manager side is going to go through that for a few slides and let you know how that happens.
Thank you, Eamon. So as I talked to people here today prior to the session, it was pretty clear that many of you here are trying to understand what the new capabilities of Service Manager or System Center in particular are. And there are a handful of customers who are currently using Service Manager or Opalis and trying to upgrade it. So the original intent of the session was to do focus on upgrade, but given the mix of audience right now, so Eamon and I decided that we'll spend more time on the capabilities and how do we actually go back and help people understand and adopt System Center 2012, and still focus on the upgrade, but kind of lessen the total time. So if there are a few customers who are really interested in learning more about the upgrade, feel free to hit me up. Once the session ends, and we'll make sure that you're getting the information that you need. And I'll also pass on my business card so that you can reach out to me. We want to make sure that you're successful. So, but I do apologize for the fact that we're going to change the pace a little bit to suit the majority of the audience. And I hope you do not mind that. So with that, I'm going to quickly change to... So many of you are new to Service Manager, so I thought I'll do a very quick overview of Service Manager. So Service Manager, the way we have designed Service Manager and the intent for Service Manager is to serve as an integration platform. So we bring data from a lot of other System Center components and non-System Center components in Active Directory and even outside of Microsoft. And we want to bring the data in a normalized form very quick and populate what's called a CMDB. And we do that using our connector framework. You see here an example of a few connectors. VMM connector here brings data from VMM. VMM, as you know, is used to manage our data centers, and it has templates, it has libraries, it has clouds. All those data come into CMDB or Service Manager. We have alerts coming in. Active Directory users in computers. So you see the pattern here. So we establish connectors, and we bring data into it. So that's one part of Service Manager. But you turn around, and the most powerful stuff starts happening once the data is in here, is you're able to now build ITIL type of solutions on top of the data that you gathered. So we, out of the box, we offer incident management, change, problem, and self-service requests as well. So all these things are possible because the platform offers strong workflow capabilities on top of the data that you already have in the system and put some process behind that. And later, half of the session, we'll actually show you how to take that data, create self-service requests, and go into the details on how to automate that. But this sets you the frame in terms of how we go about doing it, because all these things are possible partly because of the investments in the platform, largely because of the data that's in there, and then your value add in terms of building your processes around that. So that's the Service Manager, very quick overview. I'm not doing justice to Service Manager at all. But then again, I thought, let's at least give you a brief, very brief overview, and we'll go into the self-service portal aspects of it a little later on. So I want to go back to the deck. So the original objective of this session was to make sure that we upgrade. People are using System Center 2010. How do we upgrade to System Center 2012? So I'll walk you through the process that I've actually helped our customers, and I've learned along the way during our TAP program, and we have a bunch of customers who actually upgraded to our RTM, so you get the gist of the best practices. And along the way, I'll also share with you not only the best practice, but some of the gotchas that you have to watch out for from our prereq changes and others. And that's going to be true regardless of whether you're upgrading or installing fresh, because the prereqs are going to be true for System Center 22, Service Manager 2012. So before you upgrade, one of the first questions that come to mind is, why do I even have to bother, right? So we try to address that. So we have done some perf improvements. And there are across-the-board perf improvements, and people who have struggled with 2010 would really appreciate that, and people who are coming on board to 2012 would actually take advantage of it. So we have across-the-board improvements, and there are specific improvements that actually are much, much larger, especially on very common things. We also have invested in scale, and we'll continue to invest in scale. What we are seeing is an adoption of Service Manager more from the SMB focus and more into the scale and enterprise scenarios. And we are hitting up on door, and we are enabling those scenarios as well. So we'll continue to invest on scale, and you'll get that as part of our effort. And again, we've done a lot of investments in 2012. Parallel activities. So we talk about IT as a service, and one of the core components is workflow. And in 2012, not only do we have sequential workflows, we have parallel activities, and we have a whole lot of other things that we have invested in. We've made our workflows easier. We have invested in our templates. Our connectors are much, much better. We have invested a lot on PowerShell. Again, PowerShell is one of our core important automation story, and we've invested in PowerShell as well. And we've built new solutions. So service requests, Eamon talked about self-service and service requests. That's a brand new feature in 2012, did not exist before. And we are seeing an emergence of self-service requests as one of our key offerings. And if you probably read Gartner, it's one of the pillars that's required for even private cloud realization. And of course, for IT as a service, you definitely see self-service as a key requirement, and we have invested in that. We've also invested in a private cloud solution where you can actually stand up your data center. That's, again, working with Service Manager, Orchestrator, VMM, and Ops Manager all together, and we'll probably see some elements of it in our demo later in the later half of the session today. Again, new connectors. In order to, as I mentioned earlier, Service Manager is a connection, a data integration platform, so we invested in more connectors to bring data. And of course, we have service level objectives or SLAs. Those are very important for you to manage your IT as a service, and how are you doing as a service, and how do you measure against that. So very quickly, there are a bunch of changes that have happened in our prereqs. While our hardware prereqs have not changed, we have still managed to get perf out of it. but our prereqs have not changed in the hardware. But our software prereqs have changed. For people who have used 2010 in XP environment, 2012 is not supported. Consoles are not supported on XP. If you're fresh to Service Manager 2012, you should be aware of this fact that your consoles can't be deployed on XP. In the past, we used to support Firefox as a client, but we have taken a dependency on SilverLight going forward, and that actually prohibits us to be a Firefox as a portal client. We've upgraded, we're taking advantage of some features, so therefore the OS matrix also bumps up. So, and then we have added a lot of investments into data. Earlier in the day today, I gave a session on data warehousing. We have a very powerful investment in data warehousing and reporting capabilities out of the box with OLAP cubes. So we actually get that. In order to support this, we need to go back and have AMO objects, and those are some of the prereqs. And I already talked about portals, so we're taking a dependency on SharePoint. But SharePoint Foundation, that's good news. You don't have to buy SharePoint servers. Foundation is free. But in our self-service portals actually light up inside SharePoint. And we are taking advantage of that because it gives us a lot of customization framework. So people want to actually skin the colors, add things, change the look and feel much, much easier because SharePoint allows you to do that with ease. But that requires SilverLight. And at least our client is a SilverLight web part, so therefore there's a dependency on that, and it forces it to be an IE browser. So currently, that's a key thing that you want to note, is System Center 2012 restricts yourself to IE 8 and 9 right now. And there's a brief mention of analysis services. We do support standard edition out of the box. It comes when you buy a System Center license today. SQL Server standard is part of the package. But we do recommend enterprise if you have scale requirements, and specifically when you have 20,000 users or more, we have much more million-plus objects coming into our store, and then we have to cube them up. And if you're especially interested in data warehousing capabilities, we are recommending that you do consider enterprise. And I'll come to the upgrade path. In-place upgrades only. So this is something that you need to bear in mind when you have a production environment. And this, for people who are coming in new, it doesn't matter. But a few people here are using 2010. It supports in-place upgrade only, and which means that rolling upgrades are not supported. What I mean by rolling upgrades is you have part of your users on 2012, part of the users are slowly coming onto 2012, they're all coming to the same database. That scenario is not supported. It's fairly binary at this point in time. But you can do side-by-side upgrades if you want to have a parallel environment stand up. You have to do a little bit of an investment. We are recommending Orchestrator to actually go back and stand up the second environment, and we can help you. Our support people have been briefed about all these things, and if you have some challenges, please reach out to them, and they'll be able to help you out, or reach out to me, and I'll be able to help you out as well. Just to reemphasize where we are, if you are in 2010, please make sure that you are in CU3, in-place upgrade works. If you're a TAP customer, TAP customers have been given access to our CBITs, or if you're a RCO is also public, but it's not supported in production. If you're in one of those things, you can still upgrade to RTM. In-place upgrade does work. So here's what I talked about earlier about best practices, about years' worth of investment has gone into making sure upgrades do, in fact, work. This is my recommendation here. SM deployment can be pretty complex. So please treat it like any other project. As much as in-place upgrade looks easy, please treat it as any other project. Have a sandbox environment. So we've actually created documentation and support and blogs to make sure that you actually create a sandbox environment, how to take production data into your sandbox environment, stand up, perform your in-place upgrade, test it out, then replicate it in production. So our support folks are well-versed in this procedure, so reach out to them and they'll be able to help you with docs. Why is this important? Because when you do upgrade, we have invested a lot in perf and scale, but at the end of the day, it's your data and your environment. You need to be fully clear in terms of what the impact is, and the best way to do that is to bring your production data, or as close as to production data, into your sandbox, where you can actually perform your UAT, do your customizations if you have done any, and then continue to go. So roughly, this is my best practice. We have documentation for each one of those. The documentation actually walks you through how to take production data from production into your sandbox, stand them up, test, and then once you have done all those things, you can go back and safely try to do this in production. Why this much emphasis on that is partly because we support in-place upgrades only, and we want to make sure that you do it right and with minimal downtime as possible. So we also invested a lot in DR. So along the way, if an upgrade fails, and sometimes it can get really gnarly, the only way to go back is to restore it to a pre-known standpoint. So we have invested in DR, so you'll have to leverage that. So I'm asking at this point in time to please consider disaster recovery as your one of the steps in your project, because you might end up with this. For people who are not upgrading, this is an opportunity when you do set up your landscape, plan your DR strategy, because it is going to come back and help you at a later point in time. Things do go wrong, and you should be able to snap back to that. And our documentation is pretty exhaustive in terms of how to set yourself up for a DR or how to recover from that. So I'll very quickly go through, and I'm not going to actually perform an upgrade, but I'll show you some key things that I want to show. Yeah, it's here. So when I say in-place upgrade, this is what I mean. You have an existing management server running, and you run setup. It's recognizing the fact that you already have it installed, and it's going to tell you that you have to upgrade. So a couple of things. When you do upgrade, make sure that you have your product key ready, and it's going to ask you for that. And this is just because the product is, we want to make sure that you do understand the steps involved, so this is just a forcing function to say, hey, please do read the documentation. If you do silent install, which we do support, you can bypass this. But this is just a warning to say, hey, please read the documentation. It might come back and help you. So this is what I want to call out. When you have an eval version, which many of you might have in production, in your proof of concepts or in your test environments, we do not extend eval. So I just want to call you that, saying that, hey, I upgraded and then still it doesn't work. The reason is if the eval has expired or is about to expire, upgrade is not going to change that fact. So please be aware of that. You need to have product keys. That would be the best way. But we do try to help you out here. And after that, it's going to go through its, oh, OK. After that, it's going to go through its prereq checks that I called you out before and proceeds to go back and upgrade. So we do take care of all the customizations, and they'll be carried forward. So we carry through all the prereq checks. And then at one point in time, all the prereq checks will be satisfied, and you'll be fine. In data warehouse, we do there are two servers, management server and a data warehouse server. We do the same thing. I'm just calling out this fact here that when you're installing it in production, you typically have a much bigger box and you'll be fine. These values are defaulted to production levels. But when you're trying to set up a smaller box, which you do in from a POC or a demo, you may not have this kind of a size. So reduce these values. If not, you'll get these kind of cryptic errors. And the answer is somewhere in the log files, but I don't want you to run into those. Just be watching out for those. This is one of the common requests that I get. People come back and say, I did everything, but it's still not working. I don't know what the errors are. Oftentimes, the disk size is not big enough, and they're trying to stand up a demo. Errors do happen during DR, during upgrade. And sometimes the only time, the only way to get back to it is to restore it, which is why I emphasize that please plan for your DR. And it's going to help you any way along the way. It's not just during upgrade, but that's a general best practice. So I'm sorry it has to be so fast. We really want to show the exciting stuff that we have. So we actually cooked up a new set of demos, anticipating that the audience is going to be new. And we want to show those features. For people who are sitting here in the audience who want to know more about the specifics on upgrade on SM, please hit me up, and I'll be hanging around after the session is over. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, so that was kind of the SM quick tour on how to get your investments from SM10 to SM2012. Should kind of mention it's actually a well understood process. You just have to be careful and do the steps that are described in the documentation as well as the upgrade. For Opalist Orchestrator, it's a different story. So I'm going to go through what it takes to actually move from Opalist into Orchestrator, and just highlight a few of the things to watch out for along the way. But just like Srikanth had, a lot of people using Opalist will have the same questions around, well, what do I get that's new in Orchestrator that I didn't have in Opalist? And so I want to put a slide in here that just describes what the work we've been doing over the last year and a half or so to actually make sure that Orchestrator is at the same level of quality as the rest of System Center 2012, as well as add some additional feature enhancements we've heard from Opalist customers that you can now get inside of Orchestrator. So the only feedback we really added in was mostly those critical changes that customers who are using it today needed for Orchestrator. Some of those I call out in there. The biggest one, if any one of you have tried it and gone through this, to install Opalist is very difficult. Especially if you tried to install 6.3, you would be almost touring the internet to figure out all the bits you had to use in order to get it installed. That's completely gone with Orchestrator, and it's got a unified installer just like the rest of the System Center products. Some of the other features we've added in there is we completely redid the console. So now we have a rich Silverlight console that allows operators, people who are managing Orchestrator runbooks, to have a nice view into what's happening across their system. And I'll show you a little bit of that as we go forward. We've taken some smaller features as well. Like now, there's always these questions in Opalist, where do I store my encrypted data? We didn't have a way to really store encrypted data, and we used to suggest people use a database or a file or some other place. We actually now enable encryption inside of Orchestrator in those variables, so that's where you can store some of that secret data you need to have as part of your runbooks. And there's a few more features I added in there. The one I would call out from an authoring and testing experience is if you're inside the runbook tester and you want to test out your runbooks, we now have the ability as you build everything out. So one of the things we are always promoting is don't create huge runbooks, create smaller runbooks, and then call each other because it allows you to debug them easier, but also allows you for reuse. So we encourage you to have smaller runbooks and then tie them together. But we used to have a challenge is you could only test one runbook at a time. You couldn't actually test the entire process. Whereas now with Orchestrator, you're able to do that inside the runbook tester. But actually, I think most of the time we spent was on the quality part. We really went through the entire code base and we upgraded to all the latest security standards suggested by Microsoft and the industry across every different feature. That had some side effects you'll see later when you try to bring it up from a Opalist Orchestrator, but we really did a lot of work to improve the performance, the stress, scale, all this common engineering criteria we have in Microsoft that you expect when you deploy one of our products. That is now embedded into Orchestrator, as well as management packs, so you can manage Orchestrator. All of that is available that wasn't really available inside of Opalist. Third-party integration packs. So most of you using Opalist today are using integration packs, either that are built in. So we have a bunch of ones that come inside the box. And then we had others we added in to support integration into System Center. So these range from all the different products you see inside of System Center today, as well as some outside of that, like Active Directory. So we have integration packs for all of those in Orchestrator, so you can bring those forward. And then we have third-party ones. So there's a list up here of third-party. We're still working on more as part of SP1. But these are the ones that are currently available that you can go and get. So if you've got one of these products up here, you can integrate and automate and do all that provisioning and self-service on top of these as well. As well as there's a really active community around Orchestrator and building integration packs. And then they publish those up to our codeplex at Microsoft.com. You can see the ones that have been created by customers up here, and there's more up there as well. So it enables you to be part of that kind of IT and building these integrations. Instead of just maybe just writing PowerShell or batch scripts, you can actually create something that's very consumable and easy to use for yourself and others. So the first thing you have to think about is if you're using Opalist, we have a completely change in terminology to align more with the System Center terminology. So everything on the left is what you're probably familiar with if you're using the product. And everything on the right is what you're going to get familiar with when you upgrade. And most of these are familiar to people using Opala. I won't go through the list, but just keep that in the back of your mind as you start to read through the documentation and think about what it takes to move forward. This is the terminology you have to basically map in your head. And then once you use it, like I did, after a while, you get used to it. There's good news, though, in that even though we did all those improvements I talked about, the basic architecture of how Apollos was built is the same inside of Orchestrator. So the kind of deployment you've done today is the same type of deployment you'll do in the future. And it basically breaks down to the four different areas. We have management servers, runbook servers, those are that execute your runbooks. Then we have our web features that actually go and do all of our web service work. So we have our orchestration console, that web interface, on top of our web service. And it's also what integrates into other products. So if you want SharePoint to call runbooks, through our web service. We have Service Manager calling us, it's through our web service. So that's the way you get access into Orchestrator from all these external tools you may want to integrate into. And of course, we have our designers, where you actually go, we have clients you can distribute to different Win7, so people in your organization can author runbooks. Okay, so what are the migration paths? I'm not going to go through them other than to say the only thing supported, really, is going to 6.3, which is what's out there now, and then moving from 6.3, which is a migration. It's not an upgrade. I'm going to show you what that migration looks like. So get to 6.3. There's documentation out there. If you are not using 6.3, get it. It shows you how to move forward from what's there. And once you get to 6.3, which is the latest supported one, then you can move forward to Orchestrator. But for some things that have changed, so if you're familiar with Apollos, we had different ways of building runbooks, where policies back then, and we've basically deprecated some of those in Orchestrator. Are anybody in here using the legacy objects or the non-pipeline mode in Apollos? Come up and talk to me afterwards. Just the one. So you'll have more work than the rest, perhaps, depending on how much you've used them, but I can walk you through the process in doing that. For everybody else, actually it becomes a lot easier, and you'll be able to move up without many challenges. So what is the migration process? It's actually, in some ways, because it's not an upgrade, it's simpler to some extent. You're going to install a new Orchestrator server. You're just going to export your Apollos policies out of Apollos. Then you're going to import them into Orchestrator. Then this is where some of the work comes, depending on how you've built them. If you've got those legacy objects, non-updated ones, if you see unknown objects, this is where you have to do some work and redo your runbooks. Most people who develop them won't see this, but some of them you will see, and there's a process to get around that, and then you test them. That's basically what it takes to migrate going forward. So I'm just going to show you what it looks like, just so you'll see the process, and I won't spend a lot of time on it, but I'll give you some visibility, not just into how to build them, but also a little bit of how Orchestrator works. Okay, so those of you familiar with Apollos, it looks like this. And how it works, it'll look the same in Orchestrator, which is the good news for you. But how it works is we have the runbooks on the left-hand side inside of folders. You have your designer surface. This is where you actually implement your processes. And this is all done through drag and drop and forms-based authoring that I'll show you. And then all those activities I talked about are over on the right-hand side. So all the built-in ones are over there, as well as all of the integration packs and the ones you can get from the community. They'll just import and show as activities on the right-hand side. One thing I'll call out is this legacy ones I'm talking about. They don't actually show up, but if you're using any of those are the ones. We have a path forward for nearly all of these, and for some we don't. Like the dial-up, we just totally deprecate it. Okay, so this is a runbook that currently integrates with SM10. And what it does, it's a very simple runbook, but if somebody's about to deploy software into a server that you're managing, what's generally going to happen is they may go in there, they'll deploy their software, and they'll restart it, and then things will start firing in MOM, or Operations Manager. And you'll say, why are all these alerts happening? Something's going on with my server. So you really want to create a process around that to enable those, maybe their developers or someone else who's actually updating software, to be able to give you a notification that this is happening. And so how you do that in Opalis with SM10 is you would try to expose the client to them, the server manager client, and then they may tell you, and you'd open up a ticket inside of there, and then you would somehow try to orchestrate how this works together. And this is what it does. So what will happen is once it sees that ticket inside of Service Manager 2010, what's going to happen is we're actually monitoring Service Manager for that information. This is all in Opalis. We're looking for if the areas in installation and the stages that initiate. What we want to have happen is we want to get information about it. We want to get the affected servers. So here we're getting the Windows computer. And then all we do is we put that into maintenance mode. So that basically tell Operations Manager. So these are pointing to Service Manager. This is pointing to Operations Manager. And it'll tell Operations Manager, stop monitoring that machine. Because there's actually work happening on it that we don't want these false alerts happening. So all this is actually going to happen automatically once it sees that alert or that work item inside of Service Manager. And then afterwards, we just do the reverse. So then we're still monitoring Service Manager. And then when we see the stage go to release, we do the reverse. And we go get the computers that are being affected, and we stop maintenance mode inside of Operations Manager. So even a simple process like that, which probably causes confusion today inside your organization or requires multiple emails or phone calls, you really want to get to a point where you can automate those steps so that there's actually no impact to your IT organization when someone actually is doing changes to those servers. So it gives you an idea that if you can define the steps involved, you then can represent those inside either of Opalis and then into Orchestrator. But let me show you how you get these over. It's relatively straightforward. You're going to right-click. You're going to click on Export. So you have an option here of bringing over all of your global settings. I would actually recommend just not bringing over your global configurations and actually testing them out in Orchestrator first. And I'll show you what I mean by that. So all I'm going to do is export these out. I'm going to call it TechEd Europe. And save. And so the nice thing about this feature, that's also available in Orchestrator, it's also used to get from your test or QA environment, your dev environment, into your production environment. So if you've got two environments of Orchestrator set up, you basically can do all your development UAT testing on these processes, make sure they're good, then export them out, and you're going to import them into another version of Orchestrator. We're just using the process here of going from Opalis to Orchestrator. So that's it. You've exported them out. They can get more complex, but either way, they're going to come over the same. So all you have to do then is head over to Orchestrator. So good news is, you can tell, it looks very similar. So if you're used to building runbooks in Opalis, you're going to build them the same way now inside of Orchestrator. What I actually done is there's a bunch of examples that we had for Opalis that we built out that show you exactly how to use and build policies in Opalis or runbooks. So every single thing you can kind of learn, most of the activities are represented here, and it's basically a training exercise for you to get familiar with the product. But what I did was I actually just imported those directly off the web into Orchestrator. So all of those same samples, all of those learnings we've put into these runbooks are available in Orchestrator as well. And it kind of shows you how that stuff that was built still works inside of Orchestrator. And there's only one activity in here out of all the lists I did that wasn't supported. So generally, you're going to be in good shape if you move things over. Okay, so let me import one in. Okay, I'm going to import the runbooks. The one thing you'll notice I'll call out here real quick is we have this import Orchestrator encrypted data. So one of the things you may have been worried about before was if you had passwords and different things in your runbooks, if you exported them before, then you'd still have passwords and stuff in those, and you'd be afraid maybe that those would get accessed by somebody else. All of that information now will be encrypted when you export those runbooks, and so they will only get, they'll ask for a password when you try to import them again. Okay. So there it goes. It's probably very familiar to people who are using it. But you'll see that those runbooks I just showed you are now brought over, except they have nicer icons, but they do the exact same thing they did before. So this will give you the ability to move things around between Opalis and Orchestrator, or even back up stuff and bring it back in. The one tip I would give around just moving forward is set up your configurations beforehand. So these are your connectors, how you get to other systems. So Orchestrator's real value is first an integration. If you're not going to integrate with other systems, then it's really not worth using Orchestrator. You first want to integrate. It could either be with AD or another management system or anything else you may want to integrate with. And then you will actually go and define your processes and automate them. So here you can see this is where I'm integrating with that SM10. And so I set up that credential or that connection first, and I just test it out. Tested out a very simple one. Get everything working from a connection standpoint over in your Orchestrator new system, and then bring over your runbooks. Because otherwise it'll look like things aren't working, when actually what you haven't done is registered your IPs or you haven't connected correctly into the other systems. So it's just some prep work to do before you go forward. All right, so let me just run one of these and talk a little bit about how this process works, and then we'll show you more about how we go forward with it. So, from a runbook tester, what this enables you to do is actually test out your software before you deploy it out, and so you can set breakpoints, you can stop as you go through your runbooks and figure out what's going on. So you just click run, and so what it's doing is monitoring Service Manager now, looking for those things I talked about with the value set. I can then just go into Service Manager. I have this one I've done before earlier. Deploy update to machine. There's a manual activity. This will look familiar for to people who are used to SM10 and doing install. And then you can see it's in installation, but I'm going to change this to initiate. Okay, all I do is apply this. And so this is basically what you would do in SM10. Someone would have said, I'm going to do this work if you're lucky. Otherwise, they just would have done it and Operations Manager would have lit up with all the alerts. But if they did this in the SM10, this is what you would end up with if you did a full automated experience. And then it will go ahead, monitor for that, and eventually it's going to put it back into the maintenance mode for you. And then you'll just reverse the process. So typically, you would just run these and let them run. And they'll keep on monitoring, waiting for work to be done. There you can see, it's gone and done work. Now if I go into Operations Manager, eventually, hopefully, it'll come up and say this thing is now in maintenance mode. So here we go. And see if I, there it is. So you can see now, it just put that machine into maintenance mode. The real value about this is, you know, we talked about bringing all of the information in your data center and your clients into this CMDB and Service Manager. This machine was not specified in the runbook. This machine was selected inside of Service Manager because all of the assets you're managing are now represented in that CMDB. So this machine was passed in or specified as something to go and put into maintenance mode. So think about that really when you start to design these runbooks, is that if you can get all the information into one place, you then have the ability to pass that out to everything else when you build these self-service catalogs. So there it's a maintenance mode. I could just go down and run the other one if I wanted to, and then wait, and if I change that value, it would then go back, and you would then see it go back afterwards and take it out of maintenance mode. So I think the key thing to think about there is it's easy enough to migrate over, do the same process you're familiar with using Opalis, but there are some things to consider, like legacy objects and others, that you'll have to do work on. Okay, I'm going to spend a couple of slides just talking about the other things I mentioned earlier. So if you have integration packs that are built using Opalis, any of those third-party integration packs, because of all the work we did inside of the product, particularly around security and encryption, that you're basically going to have to get new integration packs to work with Orchestrator. So you saw my Service Manager 2010. There's a Service Manager 2010 integration pack we have for Orchestrator, and there's a Service Manager 2010 integration pack for Opalis. They're not the same. They do the same functionality, but they're different integration packs. So you have to realize that as you move, go forward. And it also goes for Qik. So Qik was our quick integration toolkit. This was our SDK that allowed you to build your own runbooks, or your own integration packs. And this was built on PowerShell or batch files, or you could write C#. And so you would have these scripts, and you can convert those integration packs, and they'll show up as activities inside of Orchestrator that then you can use. So all of that work would go forward. You're just going to have to repackage and rebuild those if you've done them. Okay, so that's going to basically get you forward from Opalis to Orchestrator and from SM 10 to SM 2012. But I think Srikant mentioned earlier, I know a lot of people are interested in, well, how do these work better together? What is this larger vision we have inside a system center of delivering this self-service capability and then automating the back end so that your IT processes are now represented as a single selection for that end user, and then everything else takes place behind the scenes, change management, provisioning, all those challenges I mentioned earlier. We're just going to pick one of them today and walk you through how that's built. But just keep inside your mind, you want to do a similar type of thing for everything else in your organization. And it's very similar. Apply the same processes. Standardize, then make them self-service, and then automate the process. Okay, so with that, I'm going to move on to this part, which is just a different view that you can take, especially with 2012, when you start to think about managing everything across your data center. So you may have all these different processes on the left that take place, from incident response to compliance to provisioning. And you've got all these different potentially silos inside your data center with different people working on each one. And so if you just want to do something like, the one I picked was lifecycle management, and you wanted to go through the process of what does that take, these are the typical steps you'll do just to do a VM lifecycle management in your organization. And it goes across all the different layers that you'll have inside your data center. And I can just imagine, I've talked with a lot of customers, I know a lot of you do this today, and you basically have to somehow hook this up yourselves in order to get a machine. And it could take, you know, a week, 2 weeks, 3 months to get that machine provisioned all the way through from the networking, the security, the storage, what application, what roles are going to be installed, everything else from change management, getting into the asset database, all that stuff has to happen. But what you really need to be able to do is somehow create this process in an orchestration runbook with the front-end service manager and self-service portal, so all of these steps can happen automatically. You know, you don't necessarily have to take the biggest one here to start off with. I would advise taking smaller ones, maybe what I just showed you. But you can build up using Orchestrator and the rest of System Center to almost any process you have in your organization and deliver it as IT as a service. We've seen customers do huge, larger ones than this, using the System Center 2012 products and TAP. I've seen customers do complete Win 7 upgrade from XP themselves without any touch from IT, all the way to complete provisioning lifecycle management even beyond the steps involved in this. So all you need to do, and the hardest part actually, is defining the process. The implementation with System Center is not that difficult. It's just describing what is the exact process that happens in an example like this. So keep that in the back of your mind as you go back and you start, how can I take advantage of some of the System Center 2012 assets? It's really about understanding your process and then leveraging the tool set we give you to actually deliver that to your end users. Okay, so I'm going to go back to Srikant, who has a demo, and I may come up and join him a little bit, that really talks about how would we build one of these and kind of touches a little bit more on what Service Manager has in 2012, and I'll talk a little bit about what Orchestrator has and how we've really tied these together. So you saw me in Opalis and even Orchestrator when I migrated, really reaching into Service Manager and reaching into other places. And so it was kind of this polling mechanism we were doing. Whereas we've actually tried to flip that and we've integrated them a lot more tighter inside of 2012, and hopefully you see what's possible when you do that. Okay. So I'll hand over. Here's Srikant.
Thank you, Eamon. Okay. So let's go back and then quickly look at what Eamon had said earlier. It's self-service. So we're investing a lot in the self-service aspects of it. So while the demo is fresh in our mind in terms of how we did it in Opalis in 2010, I want to give a sample of how we would look at it going forward. So I'll spend a few minutes on the better way of doing things. And I have two demos planned today, which I thought was more appropriate for the kind of audience that we have today. One is actually the maintenance mode example that Eamon showed, the old style. where we'll spend a little bit of time on how we approach it in the new way, and also take the new data center scenarios and how we actually can provision a VM automatically using self-service requests. So what you see here on the screen is a typical self-service portal. So as an IT as a service being the goal, our investment is going to make sure that we enable and surface these in a service catalog. Some of these tasks are automatable, and that's where we'll invest our time on. And the others would be manual activity that you'll actually, somebody has to paint a room or something, can be automated. But that will turn into something, you can capture it inside Service Manager and eventually have assigned it to a manual activity. You can track it. But the demos that we show today are going to be around how to do the automation. So I just want to show this as an exact flavor of what customers would be probably doing when the full version of the IT as a service, when they expose all the services. Okay, perfect timing.
That's our own IT department.
Yes. Yes. So first, what I'm going to do is to first walk through a scenario and then quickly demo it and then come back and then quickly tell you how we actually went ahead and implemented it. And I'll probably even pull Eamon in when we get to the orchestrator side of it. So here is a list of service requests. What you saw on the screen is just a categorization. I didn't actually take the time to categorize it, but that's why the first screen is for, which typically help people navigate. But what I'm going to do here is install software is a request. So imagine a case in which you are responsible for a server. Your developer has actually released a new version of the software, and you need to go back and patch it. As Eamon told before, you have to go into a tool before, put it in some kind of a mode. And if you don't do that, a server being down is automatically something that gets monitored, flagged, alerts get generated, and you don't want any of those things to happen. At the same time, anybody who is managing the server inside an org don't really know all the processes that you, as a department head, want to follow. And even if you do have a process as in the old style, you can't afford to give them a client to each one of them and where they navigate the client for that one particular activity. It's very complex, and it's most likely not going to be followed. So assume that you have a self-service request which says, hey, I want to put a machine in maintenance mode. The power of CMDB, or Service Manager, kicks in here. These are set of machines that you have in your possession in Service Manager. And right now, I've actually filtered, but you can actually subject this to some kind of a query. I said bring all the computers in. And as a self-service person, I'm responsible for one server here called the markets. Let's pick this one up. And I need to put this in maintenance mode. That's all I need. It's just one click, and I said, and I don't know what it actually does. All I need to know is, if I want to patch something, I need to inform somebody, and then there's a self-service request for that, and that's all I did. And the system now in the background is subjecting it to some kind of a workflow. If the machine requires some kind of an approval, there is an approval workflow in a Service Manager that actually assigns this to a right approver. This activity is something that I owned, and I actually configured for demo purposes to be auto-approved, but it's still logged. So you know exactly who made the request and when they made it, and it was auto-approved. And once it's auto-approved, we have an orchestrator runbook that actually takes this machine's name, which is in this case the MKT Server 1, and turned it into, it went and proceeded to go back and talk to Ops Manager and says, hey, this machine should be in maintenance mode right now. It automatically did that. And after putting it in maintenance mode, it turned around and assigned a manual activity to me in Service Manager where I can actually go and do the patching. Now imagine the possibilities. One, you can have approvals, you can have track records, you can have automation, and I don't even need to know any of those things as an end user, but the system is doing it for me, right? So in this particular case, the start of the manual maintenance mode activity is currently in progress, and after that, it'll actually go back and assign a manual activity to somebody to actually go patch it. You can automate that as well using other packages that you want to automate, but for the demo, I have not done it. And then after I go and close this incident to say I'm done patching, it'll automatically remove it out of the maintenance mode, so the system comes back to normal. And I can do all those things as just a self-service request. So let me quickly go to Ops Manager Orchestrator and invite. Do you want to come and talk about the? So what you'll see here is, in the past, while he's bringing it up, in the past, it was a pull model. The Opalis was constantly looking for, hey, has anything changed, has anything changed, has anything changed, and then it found something. Then you have to write all these complex queries to find state changes, and if any of those state changes change, you go back and rewrite your runbook. It accomplishes tasks, but it's a little bit more onerous. Now, the human process of me wanting to make a change is actually driving the automation. And it's subjecting to approvals, and subjecting to compliance. So you have all these records in Service Manager, and Service Manager just talks to Orchestrator to say, hey, you're supposed to go put this in maintenance mode. And then when that is done, it says, once I confirm that it's in maintenance mode, I turn on and assign a manual activity. When the manual activity is closed, another runbook is executed, and this time it's out of maintenance mode. So.
Of course, that point a little bit is, you know, full auditing and tracking. So all of the change control that you need inside your environment is still enforced. It's up to you to determine if you want to automate it or if there's going to be a manual process and checkpoint along the way. But no matter what happens, it's all going to get recorded inside a Service Manager and then into Orchestrator, so you know exactly what happened in your environment if you have to go back. So when you think about those idle processes you might have, yep, question. I couldn't even hear the question right.
Could you manufacture delays in the system? So if you have systems that can go down certain windows,
etc. Yes. Exactly. So there's scheduling inside of Service Manager and scheduling inside of the Orchestrator. And you could actually surface that information up to the end user. So and tell them these are the only windows you're allowed to actually perform this maintenance mode in. And if they try to go outside that window, you could stop them up front, or if you didn't want to and you want them to submit it, it actually wouldn't happen until you agree to it inside your maintenance window, and then you would notify them. Service Manager's got built-in notification back to them saying, yes, you can go ahead and do it, and that's how you would kind of enforce that process. So that's one of the takeaways. I mean, the big thing to notice here was, I think he mentioned it before, but instead of doing all these polling, we actually now only go and we pass the data directly in. So I think the biggest takeaway from this is that self-service portal you saw, that's actually an authored portal inside of Service Manager using forms-based authoring. You're not writing any code to do that stuff. You can actually, we have an extension where you can go and extend it beyond what the basic forms authoring gives you. But for most of the things you'll want to do, you can actually just describe that form inside of Service Manager with the authoring tool. And then all you're going to do is you're going to map values. So you saw he selected a computer. Because we bring all the runbooks into Service Manager, you just map this field to this parameter that you see here and say, well, this machine name goes to this parameter in the runbook. This ID goes here. All of the different pieces you need to bring over into Orchestrator, it's just a mapping exercise for you inside of Service Manager when you create these portals. So you get to create exactly what you want, and you get to map it to exactly the runbook you need. So when it triggers, it sends all that information automatically into Orchestrator, and then the whole process is kicked off again.
Right. And I want to emphasize another best practice, as Eamon mentioned. Think of runbook as a method that takes in a bunch of parameters. We did not hard code any or configure anything here in the runbook. The runbook is completely portable here. It takes all the information from outside, and in this case, all the information came from Service Manager. The runbook is truly portable at this point in time. You can actually go back and take it to another system. There's nothing inherent in the runbook other than the fact the process knowledge has been encoded. The contextual information is all coming from Service Manager and through the self-service request that's actually pushing it, and I'll walk you through the other aspects of it, but that's another key point. And earlier, Eamon mentioned that keep runbooks small, and I also want to share that best practice. If you look at this, can you cancel this? Thank you. If you look at this runbook, we have kept it fairly simple. There you go, thank you. So in this particular case, you have, I will actually show it here. No, I want to go to the other one.
happen.
So I want to get to the maintenance mode one. Thank you. So what happens here is, if you look at the runbook, we earlier talked about getting the data, all pieces of data from Service Manager, totally okay. But there's a set of things that we do here, fine. But you see there are two other runbooks here. If you look at the start maintenance runbook, it's extremely simple. It has only one piece of knowledge. It just knows how to go put a machine in maintenance mode. It does not know how it got the machine name or anything like that. It's very simple, it's very targeted. The counterpart for that is stop. All it does is stop. These two, stop maintenance mode and start maintenance mode, are existing activities. All you're passing a parameter to that. And the bulk of the work of getting which machine name to is in a different runbook. So what you have is a best practice of not actually having any data inside of runbook, either hard-coded or configured. All the data gets passed in from Service Manager. That's number one. Number two, you decompose your existing. I could have written this whole thing into one big runbook, but I've refactored them into distinct separations of concerns. One is to, given a name, it just goes, puts in a maintenance mode. Given a name, it puts it out of the maintenance mode. How I get the name is a separate runbook. That's how we are decomposed, and that's one of the practices that we want to encourage you to follow, because it's easier to debug and easier to maintain. Okay. So I also want to show another piece of demo, which is while this maintenance mode gives you the compares and contrasts as to how we did something in the past and how we want to do forward, I also want to take this opportunity to go back and show a data center scenario. Now I'm back to the portal again. So this time around, I'm going to go back and ask for a VM. Imagine that I'm a developer, and I want some VM, and you're providing this as a service to developers. I come in, I provide my business justification, and this is the one that Eamon was earlier mentioning. This form that you see here is an authoring experience. There's no code involved here. And these set of data here are coming from, because of the inherent connector framework, these are the clouds that you see here, the VMM cloud that I see it picked up as a pick list here, comes from VMM through the connector framework in CMDB. So CMDB already has a list of VMM, as and when new clouds are getting created elsewhere, VMM cloud, if you've seen the VMM presentation, if you're using VMM, VMM has a concept of cloud. Cloud is an abstraction where you can actually drop your VMs in. It has some coders. It has all these other nice things. It's a cloud abstraction. So that data comes into SM. So I'm now able to now go pick a cloud to deposit my VMN or create my VMN. And I also get a bunch of templates. So this is, again, when I create a VM, I can specify, these templates are also coming from VMM into SM, and I have a list of templates. I'm just querying for them in this form here. And I'm going to enter a name, TechEd Europe. That's it. And once I do this, it's going to be a very similar experience. The information is a question and answer that was authored. The answers were captured. The captured answers were now taken into a service request object in a service manager. And a couple of other things happen. This particular service request has a certain processes involved. The first process would be something like, hey, the person is requesting a VM. Does it require approval? So you have an opportunity to go back and then send it to his or her manager in order to get approvals. In this particular demo situation, I've turned the approval activity into a manual automated activity, so it gets auto-approved. But for your organization, conditionally, you can come back and say, hey, if you're requesting a production VM and a production cloud, I need approval. If it's a dev test cloud, I want agility and I will let it slide. Or if they're asking for a small machine, no approval required. Big machine, then approvals are required. It's totally customizable and you can actually do those things. But once it's approved, it's the same process again. I take the data and then package them into an object and then call the appropriate runbook. And the runbook then takes over to say, hey, I have all the data. I'm now going to take this and then call VMM activity to actually deploy a template. So let's go through that for a second. I will switch over to the orchestrator machine, and I actually see the runbook in action.
Which one is up here?
So it's the, I use the create VM. So we can actually go from the logs if that's possible. Yeah. Or SM Cloud Services. We go to SM Cloud Services.
That's okay. 1 second here.
Yeah, it's right here. There you go. There's the runbook there called CreateVM.
Oh, here it is. You can actually see it running. So see, when you see this little thing, that means this is running and I can actually stop it. So just as the Shrikant kicked that off, you can actually track the progress of that inside of Orchestrator. And you can also go to our orchestration console and actually track the progress inside of there, and you can control access and writes to that. So this gives you an idea a little bit of what's going on. It's just basically taking that input, pulling additional information that Service Manager has, and then these activities you see around virtual VMs over here, like create VM from template. All of that is captured inside of our integration packs. So here's a VMM integration pack, and you literally drag and drop things over. And again, there's no code required. It's completely forms-based authoring. So you're basically going to have input in, you're going to fill in some values, and then it's going to go over and do the work. So this allows you to quickly build up your processes, just keep them small. Here you can see the forms-based authoring for this. And again, another tip, don't hard code anything in here. Keep everything outside of your runbooks. And you can make them reusable. It's easier to maintain. If you move servers around like VMM to a different location, everything will continue to work because you've got nothing inside of your runbooks. So this kind of gives you an example of the power you can do. This will actually go and do a complete provisioning for you and then send it back to the user. But you could do a bunch more. All those ones I mentioned earlier are available in the same way, just like this. Just document your processes, create them in the portal, and then automate them. And if there's manual requests involved halfway through, the system's built to support that.
So you can actually send emails. So you can actually design your workflow to, say, send emails along the way. If a VM has been provisioned, you can get a success email can be sent. There's a problem in the email. You can actually compose your workflow. In this particular case, once the runbook is done, it actually goes back and updates the service request to say, hey, the request that you asked for has been completed. And at that point in time, you can actually close the service request. So you get complete traction, and it's completely automatable, and it's completely automated. If you actually go look at the, do you want to show the VMM? Yeah. Oh, we are out of time. One quick one. So the request that we made is for a VM. You can actually see that is currently happening. It's VM is being deployed right now. So when this gets to 100%, this runbook status will now be updated to say yes. And then later on, there is an activity in the runbook to say, hey, return the status back to service request. And service request will now flip over to say in progress to complete. That completes the cycle.
Yeah, you can just imagine. What typically would happen is you'd have to go to the person managing your Hyper-V or VMware or whatever else and say, can you get me a VM? And that administrator would actually have to go do the work, figure out how to do it, and then say, okay, I've done it, here it is, and you'd get that, update your service request, and eventually, after a period of time, we'd get back to your user. Now you can actually get all those things set up in the different tools, and it just happens automatically. That administrator is not concerned anymore about deploying VMs. He's only concerned about keeping his hypervisors healthy. And that saves him a bunch of time, and it gives immediate value to the end user who needs the VM. And all the policy is actually stored inside a service manager and then implemented inside of Orchestrator. So just think about the power as you kind of think about your organization, how you can spread across all the different silos you might have and deliver a single end-to-end process.
And earlier, Eamon mentioned in his intro about standardization. This is where we think the standardization is going to help. If you have a fabric and you're not going to encourage all combinations of your VM deployments, you're going to come back and say, here's an extra small, here is a small, medium, large, here are some approved OSs. So you kind of restrict your choices to the end user. The end user gets a pick list, and the pick list is going to be the standardization that he's talking about. There may be logical networks. There could be a few logical networks that you want to use, not everything that you want to expose. So you have tremendous amount of control in terms of what you want to show, but the emphasis here is let's standardize, let's make sure that it is something you can manage, and then you can actually drive that through the automation. And anything out of bound of these, then they require a different process. But at least for the one that you have standardized, your SLA becomes completely night and day with what you used to before with or without automation.
Good. So that's really kind of reinforcing that point of, you know, we started, what does it really mean, those three things around standardization, then self-service and automation. When you think about it, what does service manager and orchestrator provide in the private cloud IT as a service? It really gives that integration of the human process and the machine process that has to happen and integrates those two things together to actually deliver on that value. So that's our presentation for today. Hopefully you captured information you needed around Opalis on Service Manager 10, as well as what they can do together. And with that, I'm going to stop and ask if people have questions. We'd love to be able to answer them. But also, please fill out the surveys. Give us feedback on what you'd like to see differently. And we've left around 5 or so minutes and more afterwards. You can come up and ask some questions, and we'd love to answer them.
Thank you very much.
There probably will be, but it's not in 2012.
Repeat the question.
So the question was, for people who are familiar with Opalis or have tried Orchestrator, it's still a 32-bit application. It obviously runs on server 64, but the commands and processes themselves run to 32-bit. We just couldn't get that done in to make it 64 in the System Center 2012 timeframe.
It runs local, the 64-bit.
Correct. So yes, and so there's some standard, the question was, if you're trying to use 64-bit commandlets, basically, you can't load the module if they're only built for 64-bit. And so the workaround there, there's two. They're not perfect, but one is you use WinRM to call it on the same machine, which will flip it into 64-bit, or you call it on another machine, which will go through WinRM, and it'll go to 64-bit over there. So you can do it either on the same machine or on the target machine, and that's your process to get around that. Anyone other questions? Yep, you can come on up too and we can answer them there. Hey, thanks, Hagen.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep,
thanks. Dependencies and workflows. So can you have these two workflows reach this point, therefore kick off this?
Yeah.
Ask me again?
Yes, you can.
Dependencies and workflows.
Yes, yeah. So you do have parallel activities and
okay.
then it can fire off these two at the same time and it can join later on.
Okay.
And so that each one of them can proceed at their own pace, but both of them have to be satisfied in order to the next step, and that would be one way of dependencies. And you have workflow dependencies like this, and you can also have approval workflow where not only just you, but key, both of you have to approve, or we can set a little bit more configuration by saying that one of you can approve, that's okay, or you need to have 65% of the... So you have...
Clean it because all the data is in the data.
So you want to, in Orchestrator
so
or in Service Manager?
Yeah. So Orchestrator, we have that feature
okay,
that
so,
prunes it for
you.
So
I think he can
so
help.
When
I think
you select,
we do that.
I can, so right click now on the login.
Yeah.